Welcome back to, as our guest drinks from a moonshine jug of plastic water. This is the Rhetoric Warriors podcast. Once again, we are back. I am Dr. Dan, American rhetorician, late night comedy writer, exploring the world through rhetorical glasses. What's that? What does that mean? It means we have to talk to make things real, to get things done, to do our politics. And some of that talk is ethical and some of that talk is unethical. And I like to split those apart and show you which is which. That's sort of the game. I talk to comedians about their politics because that's fun. I talk to righties because I'm still trying to understand the right. And I think it's an interesting phenomenon in America right now. And I interview rhetoricians and professional persuasion people. So from all areas of life. My guest this week, I probably put you in all three of those categories in some way, right?
Some way, yeah, actually.
Yeah, so Erica Bundy Reddick has run for Senate in Vermont. She's also run for president, but hasn't everybody? I think everybody's run for president at some point. She's been a stand-up. I know she's done some stand-up and improv and things like that, and she produced, yep, the producer in Hollywood for a little bit. And
yep.
She ran that game, and so she's done the persuasion thing, and she's done the comedy thing, and she's on the right. We talked the first time, this is our second episode with Erica, that she started on the left. She was a lefty, and she veered. She pulled the steering wheel hard to the opposite direction, and now she's hanging out on the right.
Yep.
So we're going to talk about that.
I am right, but I, like,
you got a shirt on that says, I love global warming. You are on the right.
Well, that's true, but I also like irritating people because it's fun, because lefties get so incensed about everything that there is some delight in making them crazy.
Well, and I think that's clearly part of the emotionality of the right. They like to trigger the left.
Well, yeah. It's just like, dude, come on. Okay. First of all, the climate activists have been saying that the world was going to end because of the climate since early in the 20th century.
It keeps trying to end. It almost ended here in Texas a month ago.
I mean,
trying to freeze me out.
I'm not saying, and this is the thing. I'm not one of these people who is a climate change denier, right? Whatever that is. I'm not saying that the climate isn't changing. I'm just saying I don't think that it makes sense to bankrupt the world and for us to go back to the dark ages in order to solve it. I think that, yes, there's a good chance that people will be displaced and we will have to figure that out. But scientists have already said, like, the best we could do if we just shut down the world right now is keep it from, is it would only like warm up like a degree or whatever, instead of like 2 degrees. Basically, it would do nothing, really. And so why don't we spend our time and our energy on remediation efforts, on, you know, how to, if people are going to be displaced, where do we put them? How do we help people move their whole freaking culture somewhere, which is crazy. But that makes a lot more sense than doing things like increasing the volume of child slave labor in Africa to mine rare earth minerals that we need to make solar panels and
electric car batteries. Let's, as always, let's play rhetorician with discourse, which is what is the game. So you just buzzed through like so many different issues right there.
Tons.
Just bam, just like boom, 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 boom. I've started to think of it lately. You know how like on the Guadalupe when people go tubing?
Yeah.
How all the issues are just tubes on the Guadalupe.
Oh.
And everybody's just kind of bouncing between each other. And some of them are drinking and some of them are,
and you can't
keep track of all of them.
That's true. And then sometimes you cut your foot on a rusty thing in the river and you get gangrene.
That's just true as well. Or maybe it's bumper cars. Every issue is a bumper car and they're just crashing at each other.
Yes. Yes. And no one is actually talking. Like, we can't have a rational conversation about what's real. It's like,
We can have plenty of rational conversations. We just haven't been trained really how to do it.
That's
under stress.
Yes.
So let's have one.
Okay.
So you was, do you consider what you just said a rational conversation, a rational side of conversation. I'm challenging it. It sounded rational to me.
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I do. Yeah.
And it's pretty easy to get you to talk rationally. Like, you like logic and evidence, and like, you just pulled out a couple ideas and policies that we should go towards versus other policies.
Yeah, that's, I'm an accountant by trade. So even though I'm artistic and silly and whatever, I have a very logical part of my brain that can see order and structure and wants security and reason and for everything to balance. Like, to me, there is a right and a wrong answer for everything, and everything should be put in its place. And if it doesn't match for some reason, well, we have to go investigate why it is. I can't reconcile this account. What is missing? What is the little piece that is throwing this all off? Because in accounting, and this is, I'm going to bore all of your listeners right now, but like, people don't understand that when you're looking at a set of books, it's all these subsidiary ledgers, right? So you've got your accounts receivable, accounts payable, sales tax ledger. Even in your QuickBooks, you don't know that it exists, but there's all these various different ledgers, and they all come together into the general ledger. And that's the books that you give to the bank and to the IRS and all that other stuff. And so if I do something, if I make a change in the general ledger, that's going to affect every other thing. And I have to go, okay, before I make this decision, how is it going to affect all of these other pieces?
Right.
And does that make the most sense?
That's super logic. That's great. I mean, because you have to be aware as the accountant of all of these things, and that you have to know the whole ecology of it.
Correct.
And you have to be very careful.
Yes. Yes.
Are you as careful? Are you taking that and transferring it over into your political thinking? Is that what you're saying?
I do try to. I mean, I am a human being and I am emotional. So some of that is going to creep into it. Some of my maybe values or things that I think are important, that's also going to creep into it. But that's sort of like the foundation of my thought process and how I land where I land on any given topic.
Yeah. And I think that's great. I think, you know, one of the things that rhetoric teaches is the strength of logic and rationality and organized messaging, organized information. You typically find people, the person who has the most organized information, the highest quality information, and can communicate the best wins in arguments. So I hear you do that a lot. Like, when you drop onto a topic, you're like, here we go. And it's information. It's information.
Yes. Yeah, I do. I find
a lot of people that I talk to from the right so far have been in industries that are sort of science-based.
Mm.
Talk to an engineer, talk to a doctor, talk to you.
Yep. That's fascinating. I wonder if there's something about
that. I think you said it a few minutes ago where you said you like order. You like for things to have a right and wrong answer.
Yes. So, I've also been the person who behaves emotionally and irrationally. So that's when you talk about, not that I'm saying being irrational and emotional is people on the left necessarily, but when I was more liberal, we'll say, I was, you know, out partying. I wasn't thinking about the future. I wasn't as concerned about the second and third order effects of my behavior. I think I might have said it on the previous show. I celebrated 12 years sober this year. And so back then, when everything was about how I feel right now in this moment, I did think differently, you know? And then when I started kind of turning my attention, first of all, when I became a business owner and started having to pay taxes, when I started hiring people and having to hire and fire people and pay payroll taxes, when I bought a house and got married and all these things, you kind of go, oh, wow, that way of thinking was really from a lack of experience with these things. And because I was more concerned about my feelings and my truth and my experience than I was with how I affected the world around me.
And you equate that sort of freer thinking, freer, more emotive thinking with the left.
I do. Yes.
Interesting. Why do you, so in your life, that makes sense what you just said. You know, you had that binary of you went through a transition. You're like, you know, an organized life is better. And I think I'll organize my mind and my politics and everything else.
Yeah.
And I clearly see that you've done that. You've probably got great value out of that in your life. So I'm curious though, like most of the intellectuals are on the left. Mm-hmm. Like those are the super organized, like it's not just organized thinking. It also goes above that into the layer of theoretical thinking.
There is, I'm not going to be able to cite it. So somebody will probably give me crap for this, but there have been scientific studies that show that people on the right versus the left. So people on the left have, their character traits, right? Like, creativity and openness and, like risk-taking and all those kinds of things. And a lot of those creative risk-taking type character traits, most people on the left have those. And then most people on the right have things like, you know, stability, security, rationality, whatever that is. And so that is actually, they did a scientific study that confirms that, what you just said.
Yeah, I think, you know, intuitively, that's kind of the way people look at it. I'm not sure what, if that's true, whether it bears out that way or not, but it does seem like that. It seems like a viable theory. So my point though, is that what I typically find is that the people that I've run into who are intellectual on the right are what I would call, so somebody told me once, who was it? It was a some famous theorist or scientist basically said, here's the difference. Like a technician is somebody, you know, that, or an engineer can, and get this right, like a technician can install your software. An engineer can understand how your software works, you know, and then a theorist can create the software.
Like and the idea and then the physical creation and then the implementation.
Right. So there are theorists and then there are really good, you know, engineers, and then there are mechanics who can follow it all along, and they're smart and they're organized. Mm-hmm. What I've found in my very limited semi-study of the right so far is that I'm running into a lot of engineer level and technician level people. I'm not running into a lot of theorists.
That doesn't surprise me.
Because the left is, again, gets sort of wonked at by the right for being too woo-woo, you know, too intellectual.
Yes.
And all that stuff. But I think the left looks at the right and goes, you know, I understand what you're talking about, organized theory, organizing thinking and all that other stuff. But in rhetoric, there's a fallacy called bad matter.
Okay.
And what it basically says is no matter what system you've got for thinking, if you're putting bad information into that system, you're going to get bad results. And so right now, like we talked just a little bit about the trial, or we got global warming there. There's tons and tons of social issues going on
that are
both enraging and, you know, difficult to understand.
Yeah.
But we get all our information about those things from sources that we don't know anything about. You don't know, neither one of us knows a single thing about either one of those issues.
Nope. Well, and I don't even trust right-wing sources. Because I can tell, because I'm a reasonable person and I have ears to listen, you know, I listen to Ben Shapiro a lot. Dave Rubin, he doesn't really consider himself a conservative necessarily, but you know, like people like that, but especially like a Ben Shapiro, he's got a very obvious slant. And there are times that I'll listen to his show and he'll play some clip, right? And I'm like, yo, that is not what that person just said. I can see how you landed there, but you have to be looking at that through a very specific lens to have read through that. Or you just didn't provide enough information to justify how you landed there.
Right.
And both sides do it. And you're just like, come on, dude. I don't, especially with the way things are now, I don't know how any of us can trust anything that's coming out of the news.
Well, that's sort of the issue. So in rhetoric, they would tell you, no, you cannot trust anything coming to you. So here's the, look at this system. So here would be the grid. Here would be the grid. Okay. So here's over, which way? Here we go. All right. Over here to the far right is information.
Okay.
It's the things happening out in the world, you know? Mm-hmm. So there are chemicals in the atmosphere. We all agree that there are substances and gases in the atmosphere.
Yes.
That's probably correct. True.
Yes.
But none of us have ever, it's just something we accept.
That is actually really true. I trust that the scientists are telling me the truth and that my science books were in reality when they told me there was ozone and carbon dioxide and it thins as you get higher and all that crap.
All that stuff. So we get some information out here, but that information has to be pulled out of information land. It's hard to do this on the, there you go. And filtered through people, filtered through some human beings, some system, some talk, some organizations, before it gets to everybody else.
And then you know,
you
it's just
never
gonna be trash.
Get good, clean, raw data on anything.
No.
So rhetoric will tell you, in again, sort of logical argument, you're getting bad matter. It's coming through a filtered system. Ergo, probably don't ever trust your conclusions.
Was it you that told me certainty? One of my problems was my certainty, or was that my therapist?
That wouldn't have been me. I don't tell you what your problems are.
No, but people have said that, like that this, the like we cling to things and we're
want
just
certainty.
Certain that they're true.
Yeah, but we you want know? Certainty. It's a it's a better system than instability and confusion.
Correct.
Nobody likes confusion. So, you know, and again, sort of when we talk about the right versus the left, psychological studies of the right typically say they're people that can't tolerate confusion or ambiguity. They want a fucking answer.
Yes.
You know, give me an answer. And once I got it, I'm locking it in and it's going to be really hard for you to go back in there and do more work on it. So that's fine. That's a good, like psychologically, that makes sense for human beings, right?
Well, and that is definitely true. I think I shared with you a little bit of the frustration I've been having because I am on, how much should I throw my people under the bus? Let's just say I'm on a committee helping craft language in support of the Republican Party. That is really specific. It doesn't matter, whatever. Like, and there are some people that when I'm talking to them, I'm like, look, we live in the most unchurched state in the union, in the most unchurched county in the state. Chittenden County voters do not care about abortion. Some do, but most do not. They're pro-choice and that's how they're going to be. Why do you insist that be part of the platform when that is not a winning issue? And you can tell there's just like, there's this block and this complete unwilling. No, this is the way we've always done it. This is the correct way. This is all that matters. And I don't care if I'm continue to have a losing outcome.
Right. So you're dealing with a certain type of persuasive target.
Yes.
Which some people would consider you to be, which is a, you know, hardened conclusion thinker.
I mean, I don't think I am.
I know, but you said that earlier. I didn't say that. You said people think I'm, have said, told me I'm too certain.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's less about my political leanings and more just about my personality.
But it's got to play into your politics.
Yes.
You like certain politics too.
Yes, that is true. Yeah.
So rhetoricians, again, want to train people to be able to see the system that they're in and to step back from it and not let the system control them, but they control the system.
Correct.
So if I know I'm getting bad stuff, I know it's probably leading to bad thoughts and conclusions, then I typically, like the diagnosis for that or the prognosis to fix that is to always think, hey, this could probably be wrong.
Mm. Yeah.
No matter how right it seems to me, it's probably, you know, it's got a high percentage chance of also being wrong. And so they typically, that's why I tell people all the time, I don't really have political positions. I'll have political stopping points every once in a while where I'll kind of land, but I don't know enough about these issues to make a decision.
That's a good point.
So like the Chauvin trial that's going on right now, you know, it's going to be released this week, some kind of a verdict. I wasn't there at the event. I saw the video like everybody else. I've watched some of the trial. It's such partial information. It's so hard to know what's real and what isn't. I cannot make a decision about that. I can tell you what I feel and kind of what my politics might tell me about it. It's very easy from video to demonize people.
Especially if you only get part of it and it's selectively edited.
You know, so then we get into this idea of there's somebody between you and the real world. Yeah. And they are making decisions on both sides, right and left.
Yes.
And they're not showing the video and they're clipping this and they're raising this voice and they're all this kind of stuff. And you don't want to get to the point where you're so skeptical that you can't operate in the world, where you just don't believe anything you see at all. But you also don't want to get to where you're too certain and you probably have landed on a mistaken conclusion.
Yeah.
So what do you do? Like, how do you land on this? Does it bother you if you might be wrong, or you rather just pick a side and go with it?
No, I tend to claim Sweden until I have more information. So like, as an example, the Chauvin trial, I've gone and watched the full interaction with Mr. Floyd. I've watched all the body cam footage that has been released, not just the last couple minutes, or well, 9 minutes or whatever, where that everybody else has seen where the officer is kneeling on his neck. So I watched the whole interaction. You know, I've listened to the majority of the testimony on both sides, the defense and the prosecution. And to me personally, you definitely cannot, to me, if I were on the jury, let's say, if I were on the jury with the information that I've heard, that I've had access to, which is not everything, but it's a lot, I would acquit on all counts. And part of that is not just because, I mean, I don't know. I don't know how you could not acquit given the evidence that's been provided. You know, he was having an episode before he was on the ground. The man was clearly not well. They did call an ambulance, despite what the media has said that there was no ambulance called, you know?
There's a reason why I'm going to stop you.
Okay. Yeah. That's fine.
So I think you did a great job there of explaining, like, hey, I've watched the best I've got. I've watched multiple things. I've watched everything they've given me to watch. And now you're filtering it for me. Mm. So you're saying, giving this and this. And where people get in trouble, I think, on the right now is when they do that, they end up filtering things that in these highly, you know, charged issues. And to do that, to talk in those issue areas is so sensitive. You've got to be able to do it in such very particular ways with a certain type of rhetoric, or you're going to get nailed.
Yeah.
You know, so like when you reached that first thing where you said, I would, you know, I don't see how anybody could not acquit him on all counts. Right.
Yeah.
That's an incredibly strong statement all the way down to the end of how could anybody.
Yeah.
Versus, hey, I understand. Like if you use a qualifier, didn't we talk about qualifiers last time?
I think so.
As a technique. So if you set yourself up with a qualifier, it gives you more, a better moral expertise stance. So if you say, what you did, I watched all these things, I know they're limited, I would acquit him because of these things. Now, right. Other people may see different things. They understand why they'd still, that kind of stuff.
But it's taking that hard stance of, I don't see how anybody could.
Yeah, because then people are going to be like, oh, I could.
Yeah. Well, and it's also like, one of the things that is interesting is when, like, if you say, well, I have experience in this way, and here's another way that this information was filtered for me. So this would be an example. I am a recovering drug addict. I happen to know what overdose looks like. I happen to know what it looks like when people are on drugs and they get all whacked out. Like, I've seen people lose their crap from doing too many drugs. And it is, and I've known people who have died from it, from overdoses and things like that. I know what that does to your body and how it damages people and how it makes you more susceptible to things. So it's like, but if you say things like that, a lot of times, like, here is, like, I'm adding credibility to my argument by saying I have experience with something, and then people will just dismiss whatever the experience is.
Well, it's because you're not using the, you're doing ethos claim, credibility claim.
Okay.
Which is fine. Like, I think nobody would take that away from you. You're extending it a little farther as to now you can diagnose everybody else's overdose and drug use,
that's
kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So you've overreached your credibility.
How do you, so then where's
but,
the
but
middle?
If you want to, so what a qualifier does,
okay,
is it measures down your credibility so you're not claiming too much. So you would say, hey, I've been a drug addict. I, you know, recovered 12 years. I've seen a lot of people go through this. It seems to me, when I see it, not, I'm not a medical doctor. I am not an expert. I could be wrong, as everybody. But when I see it, it looks like this to me.
See, why is it, why do you have to even work that hard? Because why isn't that just implied?
Because you're claiming, because people all the time claim way more expertise than they deserve. Way more.
Really? I mean, I just, like, go ahead, finish. Sorry.
No, just the fact that we're talking about this right now.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like we're not experts on trials and drug, you know, drug.
But I did stay at a Holiday Inn last night. No, I didn't. I didn't really do that.
That's why I tell people I'm not an expert on politics. I'm an expert on rhetoric. And politicians use rhetoric.
Yeah, that's true.
So I can go in and take it apart for its rhetoric.
Yeah.
And that's what I've got to offer. So when people are like, well, what's your politics? I'm like, I don't know. I'm not really that political. I tell everybody, you know, I vote for the comedians. I vote for the funniest people. Who's going to be the best to the comedians?
Oh my God. Who's going to, anybody that's not against, that anybody that is against the First Amendment is not a friend of the comedian group.
I don't know. Comedians. All those amendments get so warped. People just use them for so many different purposes.
Freedom of speech?
Yeah.
How's that warped?
I mean, it gets warped by people.
You mean like Maxine Waters being out there like, we need to burn everything down, and if you don't like it, you need to get in people's faces. She's allowed to run around telling everybody to get in people's faces and burn stuff down and riot in the streets, and that's not incitement.
I don't remember her saying burn stuff down and riot in the streets.
If you listen to the news today, she's had some special kinds of things to say. She did not say,
right,
I don't
you
think
just,
she specifically
you
said
the technique
burn
of
things
amplification.
Down. Oh, yeah. She was like, there's going to be unrest in the streets.
Murder,
and we're not going to stop. And we're going
to
turn up the whatever. I'm just saying, she's not, they're not saying she's inciting violence. And she's saying way more inciting stuff than like Donald Trump did on January 6th. That's all I'm saying. It is not.
Bam. There's an overclaim. Come on now.
Do you want me to find it? I'll play it.
No, no,
for
no.
You.
That's not evidence. So if we're playing evidence games, this is one of my areas of expertise.
Okay.
And this is part of the problem too. Like what the trial happens on trial is evidence and arguments are very specific in courtrooms.
Yeah.
We're not aware of those. We are not in that courtroom. We're not following the rules. You know, we're watching pieces of it, like you said, on TV or on our computers.
Okay.
So it's a different filter.
Sure.
But one of the techniques, so I talked about bad matter, you know, as a fallacy.
Yeah.
Huge problem in the world. everybody has that problem. I have that problem. I can't get good information.
Yep.
The other one, and we've talked about this one last time, false equivalencies. Comparing the right and the left all the time as if you're comparing the same thing and making the statement that they're the same.
Okay. So Donald Trump said peacefully and patriotically protest, and that means he was inciting violence. And Maxine Waters says to get in people's faces and make them feel unwelcome. And
okay, so let's look at false equivalency, because it's super.
That's what I'm saying. How is that false equivalency?
Well, for one thing, putting those two people together is a false equivalency.
How?
Because
they're both politicians.
They're not both politicians, but they're not the same level of politician. Like, one's a president. So pick two presidents, and then that's an accurate equivalency. Comparing a president, you know, his talk to a non-president is a false equivalency. Equivalency's hard.
I don't agree.
Well, you can't disagree because it's logic. Like, you can't disagree with logic. If you disagree with logic, then you're wrong.
Okay, so how about this then for an equivalency?
Yeah.
They claim that Ted Cruz and whoever else was involved with, you know, saying that they felt like the election had problems on January 6th. That was them inciting an insurrection. But the woman, I think she's from Texas, from the Houston area, who, when Donald Trump got elected, was saying that it was a bad election and that it wasn't real, and she objected to the voting count. That was okay. Both senators, both from Texas, or she was a House rep, he's a senator.
Well, equivalency, so to find equivalency in logic, right?
Okay.
Not easy to do. Like, in common talk, it's comparing apples to oranges. That's how they talk. That's how they explain false equivalency in common talk.
Okay.
So if we line these two things up, we're like, okay, here's the person who said it. Here's what the topic they were talking about. Here's what they said. And so, like, Cruz and the January 6th stuff, we would find maybe another senator on that same day talking about that same thing, and then we'd have an equivalency. What you've done is taken this and you say, well, they're both kind of about political things or elections, so therefore this person's talking about Donald Trump's election in a certain way. She wasn't talking about that in the same way that Cruz was talking about that.
Yeah, she was. She was saying it was an illegitimate election. She was contesting the election.
Yeah, but for what reason?
Voter fraud. She literally said the same thing.
We could line it up and decide if we've got an equivalency, and then you could possibly use that as a piece of argument.
Okay.
So the problem with, like, when you keep pulling, I had a guy on the other day who kept pulling out evidence to support Trump, and basically the right creates a lot of evidence that you can use to make arguments with. We talked about this, I think, last time, that the right has a communication infrastructure, a communication machine, and they basically create arguments and scripts for people, and they get handed down through the media and through politicians and everything else, and then ordinary people just start using them.
Okay. I mean, the left does that too.
No, the left doesn't do that. They don't have an organized infrastructure that does that.
Oh my God. Are you, what, dude? Okay.
Now, Dan, you get really upset because it's a false equivalency.
That is not even true, because I have listened to politicians and news media literally use the same words and the same argument and the same exact language when they talk about stuff.
Are you claiming I did a false equivalency?
I'm claiming that you just told a lie. No, that I didn't, the right I don't does tell something lies. That the left doesn't do. Like, that is not true.
I've watched videos.
I'm sorry. You told a not truth.
You didn't listen to what I said. You took what I said into an amplification. What I said was the right has an organized infrastructure for doing this.
And you don't think the left does?
No, not in the same way.
Okay. Okay. You're not saying that they don't do the same thing. You're just saying it's not in the same fashion.
I'm saying everybody tries to do a top-down communication structure, you know, both parties.
Okay.
Where the think tanks and the national platform and all that, they will create communication. They'll create planks and positions and things like that. Mm. And hopefully, you know, people who are part of their party will access those and use those arguments because they think okay. those are the strongest arguments. You're Fair. Building it for your Republican Party, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Trying to.
So everybody wants to use top-down communication. Very common system. What the right has done very well, if you read the Powell Doctrine back from the early 1970s, do you know what that is?
No.
So he was a Supreme Court justice who basically said, you know, I think the right is losing. Like we're really, conservatives are losing. We do not have an infrastructure. Most of the universities are left-leaning, you know, all this stuff. We need to build think tanks and media outlets and fund these things and create organizations that just push conservative values.
Okay.
And that was like 1971, I think. And that's what Fox News was born out of.
Okay. Are you saying that there's something wrong with that?
I'm saying not particularly. I'm just saying it's a very organized infrastructure of we need to build communication and we need to have media outlets and institutions that support it. Mm-hmm. If we're going to continue to, you know, be a viable political party.
Yeah.
And so that's what they did.
Okay.
That's different than what the left has done.
Which is what?
The left did not have a Powell Doctrine and they did not create an organized infrastructure for messaging. So like Sinclair Broadcasting, I think it's Sinclair, is a conservative owned media, mm-hmm. small market media, and they have, I don't know, 100, 200, you just have a lot more outlets. And they can literally, and they did this at one point, they'll literally put scripts in the local newscasters' mouths and they'll all read the same script.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's come down through the right-wing architecture, like, hey, here's a script mm-hmm. that we think is powerful. We want everybody to say it. And they'll say it word for word.
Right.
The left does not have anything like that.
So how do they end up all saying the same thing then? Especially given that the majority of the media is actually owned by one, like... the left-wing media, which is significantly more than the right-wing media, is condensed and owned by some of the same people. And they do say the exact same thing. I've seen the same thing on left-wing news outlets. So if it's not coming from a think tank, where is it coming from?
So the thing that I'm trying to put in place so we can get our equivalency.
Yeah. Right?
So... is that the right did this as a programmatic, political, institutionalized activity. Okay.
Okay.
They funded it. The Koch brothers funded it. There's lots of money in it. There's lots of agreement on how to do it. And it's there. So they can take something from the top all the way down to you, which is like, so the guy I was talking to the other day kept hitting me with Donald Trump has denied being a white supremacist 38 times.
Okay.
Like somebody put together a clip package of him denying it being a racist 38 times.
Right.
I'm like, okay.
I'm sure. I would say the fact that he was hanging out with rap stars and like in rap songs for decades previously, but okay, go ahead.
But he was using that as evidence.
Okay.
And I pointed out, well, that's not your evidence. Like, who put that together? Who took the time to get 38 clips? My point with him was it's really easy to prove in people's minds that you're not a racist. Like, it's not hard at all.
Okay.
Right?
I wouldn't say right. I would say
if you're not a racist,
you have to prove, like if somebody says, well, you're a racist, now I have to somehow prove that I'm not, which.
Well, somehow, as I'm saying, it's not hard to prove you're not a racist.
I mean, that's not true. I apparently am a white supremacist because I value the Bill of Rights and think that they should be applied to everyone equally. That makes me a racist and a white supremacist. And it means I'm upholding a white supremacist culture.
Yeah, but if you wanted to, like if I was your rhetorical advisor and I was helping you with this issue of like, hey, we need to prove that you're not a white supremacist, okay? Then I could do that really easily. Like, for example, you come out and say, hey, guys, I'm not a white supremacist. I believe all, you know, races and ethnicities are equal and valuable. And I try to live my life that way. And that's the best I can do. Like, I do not believe that the white race is better than any other race.
Right.
Okay. That's it.
Okay.
That would probably be pretty, pretty good for most people.
Unless you're in Burlington, Vermont.
Maybe. I don't know. But different audiences are going to accept your rhetoric in different ways.
Of course.
But my point is, like, he kept pulling up 38 pieces of evidence.
Okay.
And that number, I'm like, Trump has been in public for 50 years, 38 semi-statements about white racism, and the fact that he denied, like, he didn't want to say it on national TV during a debate where, like, was it Biden or the moderator literally said, do you support white supremacy? And he stammered and he said, no, white supremacists are Proud Boys, stand by and stand down or whatever it was. That was an awkward answer.
I mean, how many times do you have to answer it, though?
You have to answer it right. One time.
So, I mean, do you honestly think that he could have answered it right one time?
Oh, sure. Not hard at all.
So he said it 38 times or whatever that guy said 38 times. That wasn't good enough.
They weren't good. They were not good responses.
Who defines what a good response is?
I do. I'm a rhetorician. That's what I do.
Okay.
So if you go in and take it apart rhetorically, we can look at it and go, well, here's why it was flawed as a statement of belief, a statement of what you aren't or what you don't believe. And we could say, this is how you make a good one. So here, go do this. And then if you don't do that, then that's probably on you.
Okay. I don't think Donald Trump could have done a single thing correctly for anyone ever. I don't think he could have done anything that would have satisfied anyone, to be in my personal opinion.
Why do you say that?
Because I heard him say 1,000 things. I saw the way that things were before he ran for president. I also I know people who know him personally who told me what their experiences were with him. I happen to know that a lot of the things, there were things that they were accusing him of, or the media was saying, oh, this is a lie and he's such a liar and whatever, that I know, or I knew at the time for a fact, were not true. You know, I went back through and I watched a lot of those videos that were selectively edited to make him look as bad as humanly possible. Now, I do not know Donald Trump personally. Maybe he is a vicious racist. I don't know. But I know that
that was a good qualifier. That was a really good qualifier.
I was thinking about it intentionally. So that's the thing, is like, I just listen to media lie and really lie. I mean, in all seriousness, like, you guys are telling lies on this man or on our country.
They also told tons of truth about him.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure he's probably been a dick to a lot of people.
If we did percentage content analysis of all the things that, you know, just pick CNN. CNN said about Donald Trump, if we did a content analysis of it, what would the percentage be that was true versus false?
Is that a serious question?
Yeah, just what do you think?
I couldn't even begin to guess.
Like, it would probably be 90, even if they're against him, it'd probably be 97% true. Donald Trump flew to Mar-a-Lago today.
Okay, if we're talking about like little details like that, rather than their analysis of the things that were happening. I mean, because it's like, again, you going back to what you said, that the right wing has this mechanism for making sure everybody's saying the same stuff. I've watched videos cut together or gone and watched various programs where the left is doing the exact same thing. They're taking the topic and they're twisting it and manipulating it in such a way that I go, okay, well, wait a second. I believe that thing that you just said is racist. I'm not a racist. I'm not a white supremacist. My husband thinks that and he's black. My friends think that and they're Puerto Rican, Mexican, or whatever. So when I watch cable news outlets say things.
Are you a white supremacist?
As in the constitutional rights
that we've been guaranteed. I love how the right thinks it owns the Constitution.
When you say right, what do you mean by that?
The righties. The GOP.
Am I a right supremacist?
The libertarian.
I think we need all of it. I think that there needs to be people who care more about people's feelings and outcomes than they care about opportunity. It's just like you said, there are different personality types, right? There's the theorist, the engineer, and the technician. And there's a reason that, you know, you might want your CEO to be the theorist because they've got the bigger vision, they can see opportunities, they want to do whatever, but you don't want that guy to be your your CFO. You don't want that guy to be your COO. You know, there is a place for everyone and for all of those skill sets and belief systems. I just am always, always, always going to think that the government is trash and should not have as much power over lives as it does.
Let's talk about that one, because that's the foundational fallacy.
And that is, that is where I stand. I support the Republican Party generally, or Libertarian Party generally, because they're the closest to my ideology.
But you're just against government.
I am not against government. I'm not like an anarchist or anything like that.
Why not? But if you think government's that bad, why aren't you just against government?
Because I believe in due process. Like, I like the systems and structures that were originally put in place in this country. I think that what's unfortunate is that human beings are selfish and self-centered and flawed, even when they're trying to do the right thing. And they are invariably going to overstep what is reasonable for them to do. Like, and some of this is my value as a Christian, as an example. Like, the government can never, and I know I'm not supposed to say things like this, but the government can never take the place of a family unit or a community. Like, I didn't get sober because the government came in and was like, you know, we're putting you in jail for stealing money to support your drug habit. That was good. That was a good thing. They got justice for my victim. I appreciate that. And I think that should exist. I got due process. I got what I deserved, in my opinion. I wouldn't take any of it back. And it helped me realize that I was on the right path, on the wrong path, and that I didn't want to live the rest of my life that way. But it wasn't until another person in a 12-step program was willing to invest in me. It wasn't until a business owner was willing to give me a second chance at my career. It wasn't until human beings invested in me that I got better and I was able to start pulling myself up out of it. I think it's my responsibility to take care of my community, not the government.
Why don't you see government as a human institution?
I don't ask me that question differently.
So you just said like the 12-step program had some valuable people in there for you, mm-hmm. and businesses, and then your church. Government's just another institution. How come you don't see it as human?
It doesn't have the ability to be altruistic or empathetic.
Oh, it certainly does. That's sort of one of the splits between the right and the left, is the left wants a empathetic, altruistic government. Like if you look at the governments, like the social democracies, say in Sweden and, you know, some of those countries, they're very empathetic. I mean, they're set up to be that. They're not just power structures. They found a way to meld that kind of humanism with government.
Well, I'm not an expert on Scandinavian government. I do know some things.
Well, I don't care about a Scandinavia or whatever. The concept of like an empathetic government is not, that's not an impossible concept. It is able to be done.
Have you ever had to rely on the government for anything?
Many things, but that doesn't mean like what the government is right now is the best that it can be in America.
Okay. So, but you've had to depend on the government, and when in that dependency, did you get a bureaucrat pushing paperwork, or did you get an actual human being who was invested in the outcome of your scenario?
Oh, I've seen both. I think you're right in that the argument that, so this all began like Reagan's platform was to, in rhetoric, it's praise and blame. It's epideictic rhetoric. So villains, the easiest way to think of it is heroes and villains, right? Every politician has to have heroes and villains and victims. Those are the three trifecta of a politician's stories.
Yeah.
And this is how people get people to believe and to move and to feel and all this. Heroes, victims, and villains. And Reagan came along and found a new villain. And that villain was government itself. Hmm. He was the first national presidential politician who just went after government. It's like, we have to get rid of welfare. We have to get rid of Social Security. We have to get rid of all these entitlement programs. We're paying way too much in taxes. He just went after government.
Okay.
So that became part of the platform of the right. It became part of the communication outreach and part of the belief system of the right. And a lot of people have absorbed it to the point where, like you, and a lot of people on the right, libertarians, are like, government has to go. Like, government's the problem.
Well, I mean, I have experience with why I believe what I believe. I'm not just like, oh, the Heritage Foundation.
You also just said you had some good experience, like with the legal system worked well for you.
Well, yeah, but that on the left is also trying to tear that down and say we should decarcerate people and not put them in jail and not make people responsible for their behavior.
I think the left is trying to keep government a hero.
Oh, honey.
And the right is trying to villainize the government.
You need to come to Burlington, Vermont, and because I would love if what you were saying were true.
I'm not saying
it's just not my experience. I mean, I'm literally our district attorney, our state's attorney is not, she was going to not prosecute a guy who hacked his wife to death. He literally took a hatchet and murdered her with a hatchet and then tried to kill her mother. And what Sarah George said was, well, he's mentally ill, and therefore I'm not going to prosecute him. And she was going to leave the man on the street.
Yeah, I don't know. Like when we get into target examples, then we're into evidence issues. So
well, but
let's stay out of the Guadalupe inner tube.
But you can't say that and then say, oh, well, it's not true. And it's like, no, I'm watching it happen.
No, and what this I is can why say, like you can find the I don't mean to interrupt you, but
no, it's fine.
The individual things like that, I don't know. I wasn't there. The idea that mentally ill people, like probably most of the people who murder people have a mental illness.
I mean, I think you could probably assume that there's something wrong. You have heat of passion or, you know, what the heat of the moment, there's some passion, something that's like,
right. There's a defense of where you weren't in control of yourself.
Yeah.
In the moment.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not a criminal. I don't know anything about this. But like you would say, so if people are mentally ill, are they responsible for what they do?
I would say that yes.
But it's not their fault they're mentally ill.
No, but that doesn't mean they should be on the street where they can murder more people.
I didn't say that.
Okay, but that's what what Vermont thinks. Yeah.
So here's let's get back to the sort of bigger issue, you know, at the theory level.
Okay.
What's my thing is with government is how do we make government better? Not how do we get rid of government?
To me, making government better would mean it having less influence on my life.
But that's not necessarily true. If government was really good, okay, and say mm-hmm. government was like, you know, I want to take, it's important for small people who don't have a lot of infrastructure and money and things like that to still be able to do politics. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like you applied for whatever and they're like, yeah, Erica, you can have this. And they supported that. And they gave you a team, they gave you the resources so that you could get into this. Then you'd probably be like, yeah, I think that's a good thing for government to do.
Oh, no. No.
You wouldn't want help?
Are you talking about in politics?
I'm talking about, yeah, I'm just using you because it's an example in your okay. life right now.
No, I think that people are selfish and self-interested. And
you're talking about going badly. I'm talking about going well.
No, but that's the thing is I think one of the big differences between the left and the right is the left believes that people are inherently good and decent. And the right does not believe that.
The right believes, is afraid of people.
Oh, no, no. I've had enough life experiences to know that people are selfish and self-interested. Even when they're trying to be kind.
So you want to control them?
No, I want less control. Like so people should not have as much ability to control people's lives as they do. The government should not have as much of a say in people's ability to do or not do something as they do. Now, okay. That does not mean that I don't think that the EPA has its place, you know, like I don't want polluted air and river. Okay. Like no reasonable sane person is saying, let's just dump every trash heap into the river. Like no decent human being wants that, but you'll have a scenario where, you know, you have like, here's my evidence, right? Where you have a government agency like the FDA, that the right calls the unelected fourth branch of government, right? FDA. When you have the person who was the head of the FDA then leave and go to Monsanto, and this FDA, unelected fourth branch of government, has all of this power to make rules and say whether your stuff is good or not good or whatever, these unelected bureaucrats get to make all these decisions and you have no say or anything. They're creating law outside of the legislature, which is how government is supposed to work. Okay. So they're doing stuff that is now not part of the government. They're making decisions. This guy who headed the FDA was corrupt and he did a bunch of corrupt stuff and then got a payout by Monsanto by going to be their chairman and making a bajillion dollars. That's government.
That's actually the opposite of what you were just arguing. That's bad government.
Correct.
So let's add the adjective in.
So how do you prevent that from happening in the future?
Awesome question. How do you prevent bad government? The right's answer is to get rid of government.
Is less government. Not get rid of it, less
government. Get rid of part of government.
Less government.
Right. Get rid of part of the government so there's less of it.
Less government.
Yeah, but that doesn't magically happen. You got to get rid of what's there in order to get it to be less. So well,
that is true. But so, I would never say get rid of all government because I don't believe that.
So what I try to do again in rhetoric is to make people aware of the rhetoric that's been done to them.
Rhetorized.
We are all rhetorized and we are very unaware of it. So it's always interesting when I talk to people who've landed on the right to bring up some things like the idea of what you really are talking about is bad government. You're not talking about good government. So
right. And I don't believe that by and large, when you get enough human beings together that they can continue to act in a good way. I do not believe that
you're
that's
saying
possible.
That while behind you on your wall is a document that says just the opposite.
But we don't, the problem is we don't do this anymore. The problem is we don't do this anymore.
I know.
So our government has grown so far outside of what the parameters were. And oh, by the way, just for the record, those guys, all these signatures, all these guys all knew that government would become tyrannical and would be a problem. They did not trust the government. So the founding fathers said, you know, people have a tendency to be trash. We're going to write a bunch of checks and balances in here to keep people protected, not only from each other, but from the government.
Right. But again, on the other side, they wrote a ton of stuff in there to construct a government because they also did trust government. Both things are true. They did not trust government. They needed to be checked and kept in bounds. But they clearly did trust government because they formed one.
If you read the Federalist Papers, if you read the writings of all of the founding fathers, they say things like, this is a necessary evil, but we're going to try to create the best possible, fairest system that we possibly can, knowing that people are trash and this is going to go bad if you guys don't take responsibility for it.
That's part of what they said. And they also said the other side, better angels of our nature and, you know, all these things, the good side of government and the good side of people.
That this kind of government is only for a moral and just people.
Well, it's really hard if you have a completely immoral, unjust population to have any government that works, you know.
Oh, ergo,
what?
Henceforth, we what? Should not have as much government that has as much control over our lives.
But that doesn't make sense. Like if you have people that are having issues and the society is having issues, having less government to help it out, seems like a bad idea.
Well, it depends on... because that ends up going back to the same thing that I said earlier, which is that I'm responsible. You're responsible. Your listeners are responsible for making sure that their community is good. Your listeners are responsible for making sure that the old lady down the street has enough food to eat, or has her walkway shoveled. It's my responsibility and it's our responsibility personally to take care of one another. I think anybody that does not participate and help out in their community, and I know I'm saying a strong statement, I'm not supposed to say stuff like this, Dan, you're going to correct me, but if you're not taking responsibility for your community by volunteering, donating money, or doing something, like everything that's wrong in your community is your fault.
That's a good statement. I like it.
I know I'm not supposed to say like all this or all that or whatever, but it's true. We all just sort of like, the government's going to take care of these people. And I'll just.
True. That's a good statement. I think it's a good, partially true statement.
That is a high compliment from you, Dan.
I think a lot of the things you say are true. I just think you don't see sometimes the full dimensionality of what you're saying, which is hard to do for us, you know, in the modern world and as human beings to understand all the history and all the future of what we're saying in that moment.
Yeah.
You know, like that's why to me, like it is one of my projects to add the adjectives back into the government thing. It's like bad government. Yeah. Nobody wants bad government. Good government. Everybody wants good government. I mean,
yes.
The whole pandemic thing and getting some money relief and things being organized. Everybody's like, yeah, hell yes. We want some government. Give me some pandemic help. But, you know, so it's important to keep, I know like, it becomes very weird to run a government right now, you know?
Well, and if you think about it, people need financial help because of the government. Like the government isn't doing anybody favors by printing money and sending it to them. It's not.
Issue. We're gonna keep that inner tube on the Guadalupe. we're over an hour. So again, super fun. Thanks for talking to me.
Thank you for having me. This is super fun.
Yeah, you always have good conversations.
Next time I run for office or something, I'm going to run all of my my marketing materials past you for your approval.
Well, my stuff works when you're reaching out to the left, because I'll add qualifiers and make you
even better,
listenable to the left. But
that's what we need. Are you kidding me? This was the argument I was having with the people in the platform committee. I was like, there's like five conservatives in Chittenden County and we're all at this meeting. That means we have to be conscientious of who our audience is, because we're trying to grab the middle. Like, we're not going to grab the progressives, you know, the capital P progressives. We're not going to grab them. We're just not. But we can get the traditional Democrats, and we can get the independents who, you know, can't afford to live here anymore and want to be able to raise their families and, you know, whatever, whatever. Like, those are the people we want to reach out to. And Dan, I probably the greatest lesson, like the do be shit. What is it? Shoot. Sorry. Think, feel, do, be. That's probably like the simplest and best lesson so far out of the rhetoric classes that I've been taking. Your rhetoric classes. I'm pitching yes. you. It really is like, you have to remember, like, who are you talking to? What are you trying to elicit? Obviously with this shirt, I'm trying to elicit people to be mad because it's funny. But really what I want, I think what all of us want, is to have some level of understanding. Like, we don't have to agree, but can we just at least get on the same page and agree with what like our goal is, that we want people to be happy, healthy, and safe. And if we can start from that premise that we both want each other to be happy, healthy, and safe, we just have different ideas of how to get there. Let's sit down and figure out, like, we just have to come to that common ground.
Yeah. I think, you know, that's good American rhetoric. That's, you know, if you take it out of right and left and just look at your good American traditions about what, how Americans like to talk about our communal lives together and what we're trying to do, you know, that fits right in there.
Amen.
So just stay with that. Say, I'm an American. I'm not a righty or a lefty. I just try to do good American stuff.
Amen.
Amen. All right, everybody, this has been Erica Bundy Reddick. Go to Generally Irritable. Are you still doing the podcast?
Yes. So Generally Irritable on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch. And probably in the next couple of weeks, ericaredick.com. It was my campaign website, but we're going to retool it to have like public appearances and some of our videos and stuff like that.
Nice. Well, go check that out. She's always got stuff to say.
Yes.
And this has been the Rhetoric Warriors podcast. Get out there and persuade some people, because they always need it.
True story.